relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its descent is a silence, not praise.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh, the best for... Piece of stinking filth.
Standing a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there.
Well, greetings, programs. It's Sunday, August 27th, 2017. You're tuned in to the Cold Reality Radio program. I'm Clint, taking Shelly's place today. So what's new? What's new? I finally got this damn book out. It's been out for about a month now. Well, a little less, maybe 3 weeks. It's been mailing. People have been receiving them. And finally, reading them in all its glory. So, hey, yippee. And now I'm stuck with a bunch of books. But, yeah, it's just kind of fun. I wanted to take the opportunity to thank everybody who's supported me in my, book printing endeavors, over the last year and a half or two, however long it's been that I've been promising to get this thing out and have been running into obstacle after obstacle, amazing amount of obstacles I ran into to get it printed. But Straw Man, the real story of your artificial person, is now available. It is free to download on my website, Straw Man Story, strawmanstory.info, and then you can find out how to get an actual copy of the book there. Good times. It feels good to actually kind of fulfill your dream without having to sell your soul to that industry that I think most of us are familiar with or have worked with or worked for. So yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to everybody who has supported and helped me along, given me the strength to carry on, because it was very tough, and it's just as tough to go through and try to get volume two together, which I'm starting to do now. Anyway, yeah, it's I wanted to take the time today to really break down a couple of concepts for you guys, because you know I'm sitting here as a guy who, you know, when we get into this sort of notion of the truth and patriot and sovereignty and liberty movement, whichever one of those words, freedom, draws you towards it, you know, we think we have one, maybe two pieces of the puzzle, and we suddenly jump into this giant, you know, undone puzzle with all these pieces scattered around. We can see the pieces, but we have no idea what they mean. And some of us just want to feel better by interrelating with other people who have the same experience, but which is none. You know, we know that 9/11 happened, but we know that something was wrong. We know that wars are happening, but we know this doesn't make sense. Why are we, you know, we know that terrorist attacks are happening, but hey, why are the terrorists killing their own people? No, none of it fucking makes sense. What do you do? Right? And so you study and you apply yourself. Well, God, that's what I've been doing since 2000 and, oh, I don't know, three? Maybe somewhere around then. And you know, at the time, I didn't have a specific goal. I said, I just want to know the way things work. How is it that things – what is it that is driving this whole damn thing? What is the backbone? What is the foundation of it all? And you know what? That's kind of what I figured out. I kind of figured out the dots and how they connect. And it wasn't at all what I expected. And that's the problem, because you don't expect this thing to work the way it does. And then when you go and try to tell people about it, after years of speaking of secular things, of financial reports and corporations and how the nation and the states are corporations, then all of a sudden you find the opposite of that, or what is opposing to that, what it is that these things are supposed to be for. Why, for instance, does one form a corporation? Why? Does one need a license and permission and all of that stuff? Why? What are you getting permission to do? What is it that you're breaking that you need a license, permission to do something, right? Why would I need a license to marry, for instance? Well, the answer is really obvious, because it's not a real marriage. You don't need a license to do anything real. But when you marry two pieces of property, and those two properties, those names, those straw men become one corporation in marriage, well, of course, you need permission of the property holder, the government, to marry those two. Of course. I mean, that's the only thing that actually even makes sense. But to learn that, to get to that point, to understand that this is a corporation. And to go even farther and say, hey, when that corporation forms of those two persons, the male figure, the husband figure, becomes head of household, i.e. president of the corporation, if you will. It's still a franchise, don't get me wrong. And therefore becomes responsible. And then you find the doctrines about driving and, you know, why should I need a license to drive when I'm just going to the grocery store or dropping my kids off for school? Well, guess what? That's all explained. And it's a very reasonable, logical explanation. Once you understand that you're talking about a corporation, the car is property of the head of household, and your children and your wife are your agents. It's just an agency relationship where you're the principal part of the corporation. That's it. It's nothing more. When you go to get a divorce, it's kind of like the church and state. The church and state, they say, are separated. Oh, that's too bad. Those two persons, the church and state, those two corporations are so good together. Oh, poor them. Oh, they're separated. Well, does that mean they're actually completely annulled? Are they truly separate, as in private, or are they still connected? And the answer is that they are still connected, just like in any other marriage. All right, when you get a divorce, why is it that you think the judge has so much power over your children? The state has so much power to tell you what you can and can't do in your own corporation? Well, first of all, it's not your own corporation. It's a marriage between two persons. Persons are property of the state. So two straw men walking around together, thinking they're all in, you know, love and shit. And it turns out, nope, just a corporate relationship has nothing to do with love. Love, in a legal language, means nothing. There is no love because love is from the other side. Love is from the real. That's a real thing. You can't put anything real into the legal realm. You have to redefine it. And so they redefine love in the only way they can, which is probably one of the most telling things about this legal system and how evil it is, which is that love is nothing more and nothing less than an inducement to contract. Well, who's being induced? You and whoever you quote unquote love. That's as far as we're going to go. We're not going to define it because love has the power to defeat so many things, right? Love is the ultimate power. So we limit it to simply saying, well, all right, I recognize that you got married because you were in love. And that is an acceptable reason by the state. We're not going to define love because love can't be defined by our mere words. No. But we'll call it an inducement to contract, just like a business. I have a product you need. You have the money we need. Let's form a corporation. And so two businesses get married. It's the same thing, folks. It's no different. The only problem is you don't understand what the hell is happening in the background. You don't know that this is a coup. You're an unwitting victim to this ridiculousness. And so you go and you get a divorce. And, of course, the attorneys, the devils, the devil masters out there will stop at nothing to make sure that you divorce instead of annul. And this is why I think lawyers are detestable. Lawyers are disgusting to me because they know that there's a difference, a big, huge difference between annulment, which is end of contract, end of the contractual relationship, end of the corporation, in other words, and divorce, which means separated. Well, just because I'm separated doesn't mean I'm not still married. And again, this is why the state has so much power over your children. Now, I didn't actually include some of the quotes that I'm sure we've probably talked about before. Oh, at least I've talked about them before. Maybe, maybe you haven't. I don't know. But there's a lot of interesting things when we talk about the parens patria doctrine, the doctrine of parens patria. And this explains exactly why you have no power over your children. At least it explains, well, we'll put it this way, it explains why the state believes that it has so much power over your children. And, of course, it's all because of that inducement to contract. You contracted. You basically said state has power over my children. That's your fault. But, of course, ignorance is no excuse, right? You sign a contract. You're expected to know all the things that go with that contract, all the laws and everything. If you're stupid enough to sign a contract, no matter how smart you are, I will not sign a contract. No matter what, at this point in my life, contracts are done. I'm done. No more contracts for me. Never. Never will I sign a contract. Because when you sign a contract, you are agreeing to the entire circumspectual law that goes with that contract. Why in the hell would I do that? Why would I put my name on something? Well, I'm sorry. Why would I put a name that belongs to another that I'm acting in surety for onto a piece of paper, and then be responsible for everything that person does under that contract according to the law, a law that I don't know, that I could possibly not, that no man in the world actually knows, because the law is massive, that U.S. code, that U.S. commercial code, all of that stuff. Why would anybody do that? And so I started asking myself every time I saw a contract, I'm like, why am I putting my signature on this contract just to get a phone or just to get this or just to get, I'm not doing it anymore. I've got to start listening to myself. I've got to start acting in the way I should act. This is so wrong. Love. When you look up love in William Anderson's dictionary, it says, seek consideration. When I seek consideration, it says the inducement to a contract, a cause, motive, price, or impelling influence, which induces a contracting party to enter into a contract. Well, I guess you could say tits and ass are a pretty good consideration. Yeah. Inducement. What is an inducement? Matter. So like subject matter, in other words, something that you could put in front and said, well, this is why we were married. Merely introductory to the essential ground or substance of the complaint or defense, or explanatory of it or of the matter in which it organized or took place. And see, here's the problem. We're not talking about love. I'm convinced at this point that feeling that a man and a woman has, it's not love. It's something that nature causes to happen to bring us together, to both enrich our lives, to, of course, propagate and do the actions that lead towards propagation, to have children, to have a family, and to keep the species going. It's just like every other animal out there. That's not love, though. Love is that extra mile, that incredible drive to take that recreation, that reproduction of yourself, that carbon copy of yourself and your significant other, and really, really make, you know, really enrich and do everything you can to bring that child up in love. That's love. Love is how you treat all people. Love is how you treat nature. Love is how is whether or not you step on a bug just because you can. Love is something entirely different than what we experience sexually. Because what happens after a couple of years? Well, I mean, most people, what happens? The sexuality begins to be as, we'll just say, less important. Everybody knows this. Come on. The sex becomes less important, right? And that's when you're tested, and that's where divorce becomes an option. Well, you know, we had our go. We had a couple of years of real passionate feelings and everything, and now it's gone. And well, let me give you an example why I think it's not love. And again, I've talked about this before, but I think this is very important. We discovered that in reading some of these documents that come with some of these drugs, we discovered that when a woman is on the birth control pill, that it affects her ability to smell certain pheromones and certain smells that would actually otherwise tell her that she's compatible with someone that she meets. So a man comes along, you know, you look at each other, great, you have that first impression, then you get close, you start smelling each other. Again, just like every other creature in nature, we're not that special, really, in this regard. And that's the point where you really feel it or you don't. And if you make that pheromonal connection, then you start feeling that expression of all your genes and all your organs in your body. And you really, you know, you want to go at it. You want to be together. And that makes perfect sense. But see what it says in some of these documentations, and what concerns me so much, that this is actually a purposeful thing. You know, the Jews call it having a shiksa, which is a non-Jewish mate, or or if you will, just a screw, just a one-night stand, a shiksa, someone non-Jewish that you have sex with, essentially. And how do you do that? Well, perfumes, you look for someone on birth control. There's all kinds of candidates out there that aren't able to properly identify with who you're compatible with. And we're talking about a lot of things. Now, remember, when a man and a woman get together, their blood types have to be compatible. There's a lot of people out there who cannot have children because when a negative blood type has sex with a positive blood type in a certain order, that positive or negative blood type will actually kill and go after with antibodies that foreign blood. You cannot have children. And the only way that those two people are compatible is actually to go in and destroy or suppress the immune system so that you can actually have a child without it killing the child because you're not compatible. I'm not just saying this. I'm not racist. I'm serious. I mean, this is so important in medicine. This is why this approach, this one-all approach to medicine is so bad. Everybody's unique. Everybody's got different abilities to metabolize. Everybody's got different abilities when it comes to their blood types. Everybody's got unique diseases depending on their background. That's not racist. That's very important in medicine. But as we go forward, we just want to somehow ignore all this. Well, yeah, you better not ignore it, or you're going to have some very, very big disappointments in your little induced contract called marriage if you're trying to have children. I mean, come on. Can we not talk about these things anymore and be politically correct? So, yeah, so the birth control pill, it prevents you from actually being able to differentiate between one man and the other as compatible or incompatible with your own body. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with color or anything. It's just are you compatible? Is your body compatible? This is just science. It's nothing else. And it's so incredible to understand that. So these women are going around and they'll just have sex with anybody because I'm on the pill, right? It's a good excuse to be promiscuous, if you will, right? And suddenly you get pregnant because the pill is certainly not or you forget a pill or whatever. You get pregnant, you go off the pill. Guess what happens? For the first time, you see with your body, your pheromones, your actual, true, without any interruptions and any interferences, your body can now sense your mate who got you pregnant. And suddenly you realize, I don't love this man. Love being that word that I don't think really fits. I think what you're really saying is, oh, those feelings I had were superficial. We're not compatible. It's not love, you see, because love is higher than that. Love is so much more than just that sexual attraction that you have that every other creature in the world has. I mean, that's not love. When you see creatures in the wild staying together with their mates their whole lives, protecting and feeding and whatever, I mean, that's where love comes in. But that initial whatever we're talking about, yeah, that's something else. Because it can be altered. Because it can be hidden. We're talking about something else here. Love is so much more. But we're a generation, we're a people that have been degraded to the point where we don't recognize what that higher love is anymore. So what happens then? Now you're stuck with a child that, it makes you wonder if some of these postpartum depressions and some of these women who actually feel negatively towards their child, it makes you wonder, and this is just my speculation, it makes you wonder if it's because their child isn't compatible. It's because they had no idea what they were doing when they got pregnant. They weren't going by that higher feeling, that pheromone. No, they were going because they had this sexual attraction and nothing else. They were getting their rocks off. I don't know. But maybe that's why, maybe the baby's not, the baby comes out, it's really not, it's compatible. I'm just wondering. I'm just speculating here on that aspect. But it's an interesting point. Nothing to be ashamed of, certainly. Happens to so many women, and if you are experiencing anything like that, you'll find that's a common thing, and you gotta wonder why. But hey, you know, just deal with it, embrace it, talk to people. But I let's go back to our parens patria doctrine, because unbelievable. When you really start understanding it, first of all, the whole marriage ceremony, and the contract that happens, and you know, the reason that they, by the way, the reason they have these marriages, these expensive weddings, is because you're actually required to have witnesses. So they've clandestinely sort of made you pay a lot of money and have all this ridiculous pomp and circumstances just because, hey, you need, I think, two witnesses to get married. Oh, well, you're my best man and my best woman. Oh, no, they're your legal witnesses that you're calling something because you're ignorant of what's actually happening. You have no idea what you're doing, and that you're just so proud, so happy to be in that white dress. Oh, the flowers and the table arrangements. Oh my God, I'm so happy. But what you're really doing is just getting into a contract and having a few witnesses witness it in front of a secular judge, essentially, which we call a pastor who's been ordained. So what's happening? You're getting into a commitment. Why do you think they call it a commitment? Well, a commitment is, etymologically anyway, an action of officially consigning to the custody of the state. Let me say that again. An action of officially consigning to the custody of the state. Why are you signing a marriage contract? Why are you getting a marriage license? Because your signature is an action of officially consigning to the custody of the state. Comes from the Anglo-French. I mean, that's from the 1600s, early 1600s. From the Anglo-French, commitment was committing of oneself a pledge and a promise, an obligation and engagement. Those are all contractual words, my friends. So what does the state say? What does the state say a marriage is? Oh, well, a marriage is with one man, one woman, and now if we want one man and one man, one woman and one woman, and pretty soon all animals, because that'll be politically correct, fall in love. And live happily ever after. No, that's not what the state says marriage is. Here's what the state says marriage is. Marriage is a civil contract to which there are three parties. The husband, the wife, and the state. That's directly from the Appellate Court of Illinois, case number 5-97-0108. A civil contract. Oh, you mean a commitment, an action of officially consigning to the custody of the state. Well, that's very interesting. Let's go to some other court cases. This is from Linneman versus Linneman. That'll be in my second book, actually. Partly quoting from Van Cotten and Van Cotten and Prince. The state. The state. All right, so we know that there's three parties in the civil contract of marriage, the husband, the wife, and the state. That's one person, and one person. One's a corporation, two are what's called natural persons. But don't be fooled, the word natural in legal is that which is opposite. It doesn't mean natural. It's a legal term. It can't be real. The only reason they say natural person is because they're referring to a what they call an individual, a single entity. What is a corporation? Natural, multiple natural persons that get together to form one person, which we call a corporation. Can't call it an individual because it's more than one natural person. But remember, all these persons are not property of men. They're property of government. A status cannot be assigned to yourself. You have to get a status from the state. That's called a person or a straw man. Okay. Three parties to a contract, the husband, the wife, and the state. Well, what part does the state play? Well, let's ask the state. The state represents the public interest in the institution of marriage. This public interest is what allows the state to intervene in certain situations to protect the interests of members of the family. The state is like a silent partner in the family who is not active in the everyday running of the family, but becomes active and exercises its power and authority only when necessary to protect some important interest of family life. Now, for those of you who still actually believe that the Federal Reserve is private, this is basically a description of how the Federal Reserve runs, where government, of course, creates it, because government doesn't have time to run the whole banking system, so it creates the Federal Reserve System. It is not private. It is independent. And there's a big difference between those two words. Private is detached. Independent is attached. It makes its own rules, but it does not make its own laws. Just like a family, as head of household, I make the rules in my house. And if you're going to live here, by gosh darn it, you're going to follow my rules. Well, that's great until the law. A rule is not a law, remember? The Federal Reserve makes plenty of rules, but it doesn't make law. The lawmakers are Congress. Congress makes all the laws regarding the Federal Reserve. It is not frickin' private. Get that stupid meme out of your head. There's so many people who just parrot it, have no idea what they're talking about. The Federal Reserve, you know what's funny about that is the Federal Reserve actually had to create a question and answer, a fact section, just to alleviate people of their concerns that, no, we're not a rogue corporation, no, we're part of government. Don't, we're not that. That's not what it all means. No, you're mistaking words. No, banks don't own us. We are a membership organization, and banks are actually required to become members. There's no choice about it. If you want to play with our funny money, you have to buy stock. And the stock is not ownership stock. It's just membership stock. It's just gotten so out of hand. Literally, when the Federal Reserve has to start putting question and answer pieces because the truth movement has so many lies about it, you know there's something wrong with this truth movement. What else does it say? It says the state has a wide range of power for limiting parental freedom and authority. A wide range of power for limiting parental freedom and authority. And things affecting the child's welfare. In fact, the entire familial relationship involves the state. Now, you wonder why the state gets to call, you know, what happens to your child, which parent it goes to, what days you can see it. Well, because that child is a person, and the person is an issue of that corporation. It belongs to the corporation. We're talking about the name here. We're talking about the person, not the actual boy, not the actual girl, the person. Persons can only beget persons. A marriage, therefore, cannot beget a man. A marriage can only beget a person. What do you think the courts are talking about? They're talking about their own property. And as long as you agree that your child is someday going to grow up into that a birth certificate, legal entity that you filled out when it was born, those vital statistics turned into a legal entity. As long as you start registering it as that child going to school, and you start using that name, and you convince the child that eventually it's going to be signing in that name and opening bank accounts, this is called confirmation. Ratification of the name of the person, and you literally, well, let's say figuratively, you become that person. You become surety for it. You start acting as the person. All right? That is what the state is managing. Where the person goes, the surety is sure to follow. That's what a straw man is. What does the Bible say? Of course, it says, anyone that's surety for another will surely smart for it. Of course, smart means to be put in pain. And guess what? Section 1981, U.S. Code, Title 42, what does it say? It is your right to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and exacted, which basically means extortion. Those are your rights, people. That is the right of persons, not your God-given rights. You give those up by becoming a person and entering into the contractual relationship because the maxim of law says the contract makes the law. You're starting to get how this all works, how we're tricked and induced into these commitments, which with them carry a full expectation and express consent to the law. You can't use someone else's property. You can't rent a car unless you're going to agree to the law that manages that car. It's their property. Excuse me. You don't get to make the law when you're using someone else's property. The person is property of government. You get a license to marry two persons. Those two persons become one corporation, to which the man or the male figure, the person that is identified as male, becomes the head of household. Well, you know, the president is also head of household of the United States. It just means you're becoming the key figure, the responsible figure. If your child goes out, gets in trouble, you're responsible. Roberts versus Roberts says the state is a party to every marriage contract of its own residents, as well as the guardians of their morals. Oh, well, that's a scary thought. Our state, you see, is the United States. We're not part of the individual state. So who's the guardians of our morals? Why, it's that lovely, wonderful Congress of ours. Oh, I'm so patriotic towards that Congress. They're just so moral, and I'm so happy that they are the guardians of my morals, because, gosh, what would I do without them? As far as the attorney class, which includes judges, of course, P.G. Wodehouse, he said, judges display in the matter of arranging alimony that reckless generosity which is found only in men who are giving away someone else's cash. Let's go back to case law. What does it say? I love this stuff. Meadows versus Meadows. Quoting Tillman versus Roberts, Ayers versus Kelly, Black's Law, 5th edition, Ex parte Wright, Chandler versus Watley. Again, this will all be in my second, but it's actually on my blog too. Do you own your children? If you want to look these up. Do you own your children? What does it say? It says the primary control and custody of infants is with the government. The primary control and custody of infants is with the government. You're out there going, oh my God. But remember, infants is a legal term applied to real things. It's a fictional term applied to something real. You have to believe. You have to act. You have to do everything you do with the expression that your child, your real, living, breathing little guy or girl is an infant, a child. These are legal terms. So, of course, what this is really saying, the primary control and custody of infants is with the government, is that the primary control and custody of government property is with the government. Infants are government. It's a word they created. It's their term of art. They own it in the style it's being used, in the jurisdiction it's being used. And as you're, if you're in that jurisdiction, if you've married and agree that you're a person and you're married, you get it. It's us acting the part. We're actors. We're agents. We're doing it to ourselves. Parents patria literally means parent of the country. This is back to the court case here. Parents patria, literally, parent of the country. The court stands in the position of parents patria, of children. Latin term meaning parent of the country refers traditionally to the role of the state as sovereign and guardian of persons under legal disability. Of course, a child is under a legal disability until the age of consent. 18 in some countries, 15 in England, 21 other places. Pursuant to the parents patria doctrine, the primary control and custody of infants is with the government. Pursuant to the fact that the state is sovereign and guardian over persons, not men, but persons, that's men who act as persons, because men are surety, they ensure the action of the person, which is a contractual, basically a piece on the monopoly board, so when the dice is rolled, the piece must be moved, regardless of where it's going to land. Sorry, you're surety. Pursuant to the parents patria doctrine, the primary control and custody of infants is with the government. Remember what an infant is. Is your boy or girl an infant? Well, you've been trained to say yes. How can you say no? It's just a reasonable, logical question. Of course, my child is an infant. So, but you're using that in a legal, as a legal term. And therefore, the primary control and custody of your infant is with the government to be delegated to you. So we control it, but we're going to delegate it back to you as of course. That means, of course, actually has the meaning, literally how it sounds. Of course means as it happens or on the road as things happen, that kind of thing. Of course. To their natural guardians and protectors, so long as such guardians are suitable persons to exercise it. What's a suitable person? One who follows the legal law. One who sticks their children in public schools like good little citizens, gets them vaccinated, gets in there, does all the good little things to screw up our children's life. Well, then you're a good suitable person to exercise the delegated authority of being their natural guardians protectors. But remember, the first thing you do is you give that right up, and then it is redelegated under contract, and therefore under condition to you. This is why it can be taken. This is why the Child Protective Services can come to you anytime it wants to and take your child, because you agreed in the first place that the state is parents patria. The primary control. Primary means top. Head, largest, biggest, most extreme and sovereign guardian of persons. You agreed to that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to call you dumb or idiots. We all do it. We're all ignorant. We all need to wake up from this, what we're being induced to do because we feel sexual attraction, which again I say is not love, but we call it love because what else can attorneys really understand? In other words, going back to our case, in other words, the state is the father and mother of the child. The state is the father and mother of the child, and the natural parents are not entitled to custody except upon the state's beneficent recognition that natural parents presumably will be the best of its citizens to delegate its custodial powers. I don't know about you folks, but that's pure tyranny. That is absolutely 100% the opposite of parental rights and freedoms. Opposite, right there. That's what we live under. But we believe that we live under the opposite. We're told we have freedom. We're not told that freedom means franchise. That freedom is a lie. That everything's a lie. It's the Matrix. Everything's a lie. It's a simulation. It's not real. Simulation is never a sameness. The law, back to the case, seriously, the state is the father and the mother, and the state gives you back your child, forces you to, wait a minute, why isn't the state paying full benefits and buying my child's food? Why is the state not paying for everything if the state owns my child? Oh, well, we give it back to you and give you the right to raise your child as long as you're good and you stay broke and you never get ahead and it's so fucked up. The best of its citizens to delegate its delegating its custodial powers to you as long as you're a good citizen. The law devolves the custody of infant children upon their parents. Not so much upon the ground of natural right, in the later, as because the interests of the children and the good of the public, as a general rule, are thereby promoted. Folks, what is the public? Do you know? Do you have any clue what the frickin' public is? Do you think the public is your Do you think because it's public, everybody owns it? What does it mean that every person has the right, every person? Well, that means it's property of government, you fool. The good of the public. What is the public? Come on, it's government. Public lands? States' rights? You heard about the states' rights, state lands projects all over the country where the government, the Congress denies the states from taking back their lands? Why? Because they're public? That means government is in trust of them? Do you know that the people of Nevada tried to get their public lands back and Congress will not consent? Because Congress has the final. Why? Because when Nevada formed its territory into a state, well, they agreed to forever disclaim their public lands, just like every other state out there, because these were being recreated after the Civil War into federal areas. And guys, you want to know what's happening. You want to know why all of us are stuck in this realm called the public. Why we can't traverse ourselves into the public or the private lands out there of the landholders. Well, you just have to go back to the Buck Act. What is the Buck Act? Well, let me just read a real quick excerpt on the Buck Act for you, but look it up yourself. It'll make a little more sense. I wouldn't say this is exactly correct, but it's a pretty good explanation of how it worked, what happened after the Civil War, specifically when the United States, we call it the War of Northern Aggression, but it was really the War of United States District, the National Aggression. It was the ultimate battle between national government and state governments state governments united into a confederation, which to government is a conspiracy, of course. In order for you to understand the full import of what is happening, we must explain certain laws to you. When passing new statutes, the federal government always does everything according to the principles of law, the maxims. In order for the federal government to tax a citizen of one of the several states, they had to create some sort of contractual nexus. The contractual nexus is, of course, the Social Security number and the system and law and Title 42 and every other code that goes with it. So it's a contractual relationship. In 1935, the federal government instituted Social Security. The Social Security Board then created 10 security districts. The combination of these districts resulted in what is called a federal area, which covered all the several states, kind of like a clear plastic overlay. I just spread saran wrap over the United States. You can't see it because districts aren't visible. They're not real. They're a border that doesn't exist, and districts can be stacked on top of districts. You can live in 100 different districts and pay 100 different district fees and taxes. But in this case, we're talking about the main, the foundation, the national federal areas. In 1939, the federal government instituted the Public Salary Tax Act of 1939. This act is a municipal law of the District of Columbia for taxing all federal and state government employees and those who live and work in any federal area. Oh, but I'm in the state, you say. No, you're in the public, and therefore you're in a federal area. But I'm a citizen. No, you're a citizen of the United States. Shut up. Now, the government knows that it cannot tax state citizens who live and work outside of the territorial jurisdiction of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, or Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 in the Constitution. So, in You gotta work around it, right? In 1940, Congress passed what's called the Buck Act, Congressman Buck, for U.S. Code Sections 105 through 113. That's U.S. Code Title 4, Sections 105 through 113. In Section 110, Part E, the act authorized any department of the federal government to create a federal area for imposition of the Public Salary Tax Act of 1939. You wonder how they got such an incredible tax hold around us? Well, this is the loophole. The tax is imposed at 4 U.S. Code, Section 111. The rest of the taxing law is found in the Internal Revenue Code. Again, why do you create the Internal Revenue Service? You create an independent body to handle all the rules when it comes to those who are in a federal area. Congress doesn't have time to do that, so it creates an independent agency called the Federal Internal Revenue Code. Or Internal Revenue Service. Now, there's a lot of thought to go with that. It's a foreign agency, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't matter, folks. Get that kind of crap out of your head. You're dealing with corporations. You're not dealing with governments. You're dealing with corporations. Whatever you think about the United States and its borders and all that patriotic shit has to go out the window. You're not dealing with anything constitutional. You're not dealing with anything because you're under a contract, and the contract makes the law. You don't get protections from the Constitution because you gave up that right. It's a negative right. It's called the natural law. You gave up that right to be a citizen and get protection and security. And they warned you. They warned you, them founding fathers, those evil bastards. They said, hey, anybody who's fool enough to give up their freedom for a little protection and security deserves neither. Of course, you don't deserve it. You don't. Sorry. The Social Security Board had already created a federal area overlay for U.S. Code Section 110D, says the term state, capitalized, state, includes any territory or possession of the United States. And Section 110E says the term federal area means any lands or premises held or acquired by or for the use of the United States for any department, establishment, or agency of the United States, and any federal area or any part thereof, which is located within the exterior boundaries of any state, shall be deemed to be a federal area located within such state. Okay? Any part thereof. That basically covers everything. Which is located within the exterior boundaries of any state. What is an exterior boundary of any state? What the hell does that mean? Well, states are divided into private and public lands. It's that simple. What's the exterior boundary of a state? Public lands. Federal lands, man. Federal areas. That's where we all exist as U.S. citizens. Shall be deemed to be a federal area located within such state. There is no reasonable doubt that the federal state is imposing an excise tax under the provisions of 4 U.S. Code Section 105, which states in part that Section 105, the state and so forth, taxation affecting federal areas, sales or use tax, Section A. No person shall be relieved from liability for payment of, collection of, or accounting for any sales or use tax levied by any state or by any duly constituted tax. Remember, what is a state? Term state includes any territory or possession of the United States. See, this is how they trick you. You see, they're not talking about the states, necessarily, when they say the word state, they're talking about the United States. The district and its federal areas. Includes any territory or possession of the United States. Oh, but what does it say? For any state. What a frickin' bunch of a-holes. Okay. Or by any duly constituted taxing authority therein, having jurisdiction to levy such tax on the ground that the sale or use with respect to which such tax is levied occurred in whole or in part within a federal area. So this is why, for instance, you wonder why when you take milk across the state, raw milk across the state border, that's such a crime. Well, you're committing interstate commerce. Who's in charge of interstate commerce? The federal government. That is one thing the states delegated to their overlord. Okay? So, yeah, it is illegal to transport anything across state lines. That is against federal law. You're in a federal area. You're a United States federal citizen. What can I tell you? You can argue. You can complain. You can bitch about it all you want. But it's the law, and as long as you're getting protections and security from the state is gonna do everything it can to extort and exact everything it can from you. It's not doing it from you. It's nothing personal. It's taking from your person, from your vessel. You're operating in government property called the person. It's your fault. You're the one. You're surety. The person owes the tax. Therefore, the surety must ensure that the person pays the tax. You're going to walk around in a straw man. You're going to be responsible for that straw man and all its extortions and exactions that go to federal government for using its federal areas. It's perfectly reasonable, you see, when you're talking about the perspective of evil. The perspective of landlords. It makes perfect sense. The question is, can you alter your own perspective? Can you suddenly empathize or even imagine what it's like to be one of those assholes? That's the question. If you can't, then you're never going to understand this stuff. You have to be able to put yourself in their shoes. And such state or taxing authority shall have full jurisdiction and power to levy and collect any such tax in any federal area within any such state to the same extent and with the same effect as though such area was not a federal area. And the Buck Act, the Hubble Oil and Refining Company versus Kelberg. Irrespective of what the tax is called, if its purpose is to produce revenue, it is an income tax, or what's called a receipts tax under the Buck Act. Irrespective of what any tax is called, if its purpose is to produce revenue, it is an income tax. Where did the income tax come from, folks? Well, are you starting to get it? You're working in a federal area. You are an employee of the United States, in other words. That's what does it mean to be employed? It means to be used. Who's the user? Thus, the obvious question arises, what is a federal area? A federal area is any area designated by any agency, department, or establishment of the federal government. This includes the Social Security areas designated by the Social Security Administration, any public housing area that has federal funding, a home that has a federal bank loan, a road that has federal funding, and almost everything that the federal government touches through any type of aid, financial aid. Remember, what is the government's product? Money. So anything that its money touches, it basically freaking like a black cloud over it. This is why you don't want to take federal aid in your local municipalities. You don't want that. Because once that federal aid comes in, guess who's making the rules? See, then you qualify under this federal area nonsense. But this, I mean, think about it, folks. You gotta work. You're dumbed down enough to say, oh, well, I have a Social Security number. It's asking me for my, it's asking me if I'm a U.S. citizen. It's basically a U.S. employee. It's asking me if I'm eligible to work as a U.S. employee or U.S. citizen. It's asking me if I have a Social Security number to, because guess what? The more I work, the more Social Security benefits I'll get at the end of my life. Yippee. Here's my Social Security number. Oh, look, and it protects me and gives me security in case I can't work. Oh, wonderful. You've just qualified yourself in every way possible to be in a federal area. Federal area attaches to anyone who has a Social Security number or any personal contact with the federal or state governments. Through this mechanism, the federal government usurped the sovereignty of the people, at least those who were dumb enough like us to do it, as well as the sovereignty of the several states, by creating federal areas within the boundaries of the states under the purported authority of Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 in the Federal Constitution, which states, the Congress shall have power to disapprove of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. Well, guess what, folks? How does Congress possibly get power, or I should say the United States, get possibly get power over the private states? Well, first, you defeat them in a civil war. You utterly just beat the shit out of them. You destroy families. You do everything you can to diminish the notion of what the whole thing was created for in the first place, the private states, right? You defeat the militias. You utterly just run us over. And then you force us, essentially, to create new constitutions or amended constitutions that say that we, here, I'll read you from the Nevada Enabling Act, which is actually in the Nevada Constitution, available on any website. First, that there shall be not in this state neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. No, we gave that up, and it's called federal citizenship. Otherwise than in the imprisonment of crimes, which is federal citizenship, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. Second, the perfect toleration of religious sentiment shall be secured. In other words, no moral law will be legal, and no inhabitant of said state shall ever be molested in person or property on account of his or her mode of religious worship. Third, that the people inhabiting said territory, now they use the word territory because before it's a state, it's a territory. Territory means land, the people of the land. That the people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within said territory, and that the same shall be and remain at the sole entire disposition of the United States, and that lands belonging to citizens of the United States residing without the said state shall never be taxed higher than the land belonging to the residents thereof, and that no taxes shall be imposed, etc., etc., etc. So here you have each state creating a similar doctrine, a similar what's called enabling acts. If you look up the enabling acts for your state, you'll find the same exact wording with the exception of Texas. Now don't get me wrong, Texas got the shit beat out of them. They have this religious notion down in Texas that they are somehow different than everybody else. Here's the difference. Texas kept hold of their lands. They're unappropriated public lands. Now, all that means is the land that is currently being held by the BLM and other agencies. All right. So we're talking about land that hasn't been taken by a private person or citizen of the state itself. Okay. So everything that's not the private lands of the people, which we call public, became under a federal area, federal jurisdiction. All right. This is why Nevada really, really wanted to alter and change this, and they came up with a new constitution. The people in the state voted for that constitution, and they passed the constitution. And here is what it says in the Nevada constitution. This is actually what it says. This is actually under what I just wrote. This is the rewrite that the people of the frickin' state of Nevada actually voted into effect, but will not be fulfilled, will not be accepted by Congress, because the people of Nevada can't do shit unless Congress first releases those public lands, that federal area, to the state. And so amazingly, the people of the state, this is why I tell you folks, states' rights are gone. When you talk about states' rights, you're talking about the private lands that we are not a part of. So don't go around quoting states' rights. It's all crap. It's all a freaking lie. What does it say now? It still says first that there shall be in this state neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. It says the perfect toleration of religious sentiment shall be secured. But what does it say on its third point? It says third. Now remember what it said. The people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right entitled to the unappropriated public lands lying in said territory. Well, now what does it say? Now what did the people change? What did the vote change? That the people. Now people here is, again, uncapitalized. It's talking about the common vote. In other words, the people. That the people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare. And here's where they changed it. They got together and they changed it. It says that lands belonging to citizens of the United States residing without the said state, in other words, on public land that is not taken by a private party, a landholder, shall never be taxed higher than the land belonging to the residents thereof, and no taxes shall be imposed. You see, they're taking back, or they think they have the power as subjects, slaves, in other words, of the United States. They actually think they have the power to change this. Well, here's what it said. amended in 1956 and 1996. The First Amendment was proposed and passed by the 1953 legislature, agreed and passed by the 1955 legislature, approved and ratified by the people at the 1956 general election. Statutes of Nevada, 1953, 718, et cetera, et cetera. The Second Amendment, the second one we read, the alteration, was proposed and passed by the 1993 legislature, agreed to and passed by the 1995 legislature, and approved and ratified by the people, in other words, the vote, at the 1996 general election. The common people, in other words, the subjects, thought that they had the power to do this. They now know better. Approved and ratified by the vote, the people, at the general election in 1996, effective on the date Congress consents to the amendment or a legal determination is made that such consent is not necessary. Did you hear that? So Congress is literally disobeying the entire will of the entire state of Nevada and its Congress because it will not give up the power of taxation due to the Buck Act that we just read by creating these federal agents areas, bypassing its constitution in every way possible to create these federal tax areas to ensure that it can extort and exact every single employee of every single corporation on every part of public land. It says right here that this is only effective on the date that Congress consents to the amendment or the legal determination, and that's how it stands today. 1996, that is, what, that's 21 years now. It's been sitting there. The people got together. They voted. The Congress created the amendment. It's all, and yet Congress won't do anything about it. Now, I don't care if all frickin' 50 states in the union do the same thing. Congress, because Congress is the United States is a corporation, is not legitimate in any way. It is called de facto or illegitimate. It is a corporation designed to, as a holding company for U.S. citizens. The livestock, all right, it's the state. It is not going to relinquish its federal lands, folks. I mean, unless suddenly you people actually wake up and realize what the hell's happening in this country. Unless you realize unless you realize that you don't even own your freaking children because of this crap. Unless you realize that you're not in a state, that you're in a federal area. Because you're standing on cellophane that represents a jurisdiction, a district. Remember what district means? District means to be put in seizure, distrained, and distress. Do those sound like good words to you? Well, that's what district means. What do you think the District of Columbia is? Seizure, distress, and distraint. And this proves it right here because, hey, the people and the Congress decided they were going to take back their lands. And Congress said, screw you. Screw you, Nevada. We own 90-something percent of Nevada and we ain't giving it back because you were stupid enough or maybe under distress enough to give it up in the first place. Sorry. You starting to understand how things work around here? You see, it's all, everything is under several layers of cellophane. And these districts, these invisible areas, as they call them, keep us from the land. We can't touch the land. We're not part of it. We're citizens of a foreign entity, a foreign state, as they call it. We're not in the states because the states gave up their public lands to be held governed and taxed by the federal government. So this is why I call myself now the anti-patriot. I call myself the anti-truther. I call myself the anti-sovereignty. All those stupid words, anti-liberty, it's all a lie. If I'm a rat in a freaking cage, I'm in an area designated by my master that I can be free. Is that true freedom? Of course not. Of course it's not true freedom. Wake up, people. I don't know. What else can I tell you? You don't own your children. Yeah. You don't own the land. You don't own the homes. You got nothing. And yet you're paying for it all, aren't you? The one thing that you do own, besides your children, unless you give them up, is your labor. You know, labor is considered as property. Labor is your property. When you give that labor away in exchange for, oh, wait a minute, what are you exchanging it for? Federal dollars. Oh, jeez. I did it again. I exchanged my property for a debt note. Ah, now I gotta pay all these taxes. Oh, that was stupid. You see, every turn we do the wrong thing. And every turn we induce ourselves into these contractual situations. And that's why they call it voluntary. See, volunteerism to the state is basically a very happy state of ignorance for all of us. You must keep your people stupid. I mean, literally, completely ignorant of the law that they're under, and yet still have them sign their names, which are property, of course, so that they're stuck under that law that they've never actually even read. That's the amazing part about it. I don't know. So I want to tell you, I want to go back to what I was saying before. You know, I think we got through some of these, what is a license, permission, or authority to confer right or power, which does not exist without it. So you can't get married without a license. Why? Because, of course, you're marrying two pieces of property that don't belong to you, the person, the straw man. But here's my problem. Here's my problem at this moment. So, obviously, hey, by the way, just to give credit where credit is due, you can go to the Story of the Buck Act, written by Richard McDonald, at usa-the-republic.com, and you can find that there. It's a pretty good site. Again, you have to verify everything, because everybody has different foundational knowledge. Sometimes we want to be all patriotic and stuff, but for the most part, it's a pretty good site. The Story of the Buck Act. The story of your life. So, yeah. What I want to talk about now, though, is why aren't people listening to me? Why is it that my audience has shrunk? As I keep discovering all these truths, and yet all these truths defeat all this patriotic nonsense that we hear all over the place, all this take states' rights, take back the country, and did this, and succeeding. There is no secession, by the way. Secession is an act of stealing property. You don't secede from the Union. It's bullshit. California is not going to secede, unless, of course, Congress agrees to it, which would mean that it would be giving up its federal areas and taxation rights. So if there is a secession, I'll be very surprised. And if there is, without any kind of contract or something with the United States. And basically, you know, you read enough, you find out secession is another lie. You found out what happened to those who tried to secede in the South. The United States came in and whipped some butt. We know it wasn't a war over slavery. It was a war over basically signing over your state to the debts of the United States. That's what they didn't want to do. It wasn't a war about slavery. Even Lincoln said over and over, this is a war about establishing and keeping the Union. I don't give a shit about slavery. Slavery doesn't matter to me. It's not an issue. But if it saves the Union, well, do away with slavery. That's what he said. He didn't care. So, I actually believe that what I'm suffering from now, with all this information I've collected, all the pieces of the puzzle I've put together to now see this almost full, full scene, basically, all the dots connected in some way or the other. Why am now that I have the truth? The truth, the self-evident truth, the self-existent truth, plus all the evidential stuff that has to do with what we call truth, which is actually, you know, confirmed and ratified lies that our government and its laws. Why is it that I'm being persecuted? Why is it that nobody wants to interview me anymore? Why is it that all these Patriot radio shows don't want to touch me? Well, here's what I've kind of come to the conclusion of, and I'm a little saddened by this. I'm being persecuted just as the Bible said I would be. Again, I'm not talking about religion here. Remember, when I talk about the Bible, you people who listen to me on a regular basis, you know I'm talking about the law, the moral law that the government fully recognizes and says is part of the common law. Okay, it's voluntary. It cannot be enforced. You either abide by it or you don't. Why are there private people in each state with land? Because they abide to a certain degree to the Bible. The Bible tells them do not respect persons and that sort of thing. So, what's happened, man? Well, I've found the truth. I've written a book on it, in the process of writing two or three more books about it, and now suddenly nobody's interested, except the people that have been following me forever, watching me grow, watching me discover, and actually understanding what the hell's going on. I'm not. No one wants to interview me. What the hell happened? Well, I'm telling the truth. And you see, what I discovered is that true Christianity, in the form, and I hate to even use the word Christianity because it's not in the Bible. You're not told to be a Christian, right? You're told to follow the law, which is to follow the example, which is the Son, right? But the idea of being Christ-like and to follow the law is to tell the truth, to live in the truth at all times, to differentiate at all times between what is real and what is fiction, what is real, what is of nature, or i.e. an act of God, what is an act of the state, a legal fiction, right? What's the difference? Always adhere to the truth. What is the truth? Well, the truth is, of course, self-evidence, self-existence. That's the definition of God, which is why I'm so interested in explaining that, if I could just get that definition. Nobody's ever come to you in your lifetime and said, can I give you the definition of God so that you can finally read the Bible and understand what the fuck it's saying? No one's ever come to you and said, hey, I have the definition. No, they come to you and say, hey, have you heard the good news? I'm a Christian. I have a personal relationship with you. And we're turned off and we want nothing to do with it. Or we fall for it and we become part of the cult. It's all crap. It's all the doctrine of religion, not The Bible is not religion. The Bible is law. And the government fully recognizes it as the foundation of law. You follow it or you don't. If you don't, then you become a person of the United States. Bible says never respect persons. That's all corporations. That includes the state. You see, we're in such... That's the natural law. Why do they call it the natural law? Well, it's because it only has to do with real things. It tells you to stay away from anything unnatural. The natural law can only govern that which is natural. The legal law can only govern that which is artificial. That's all it is. God and the devil, real and artificial. Satan, real and what is adversarial to real. That's artifice. I've taken away the mystery. I've taken away the ignorance due to language construction and grammar. I've taken away the religiosity of the Bible, and I found out what it actually says. And it's just it's the law. It's not, there's nothing. And I'm being persecuted. I'm telling the truth. And I'm being persecuted. This is what true persecution is, because this is what true Christianity actually is to live by and speak the law, which is the Bible. It is recognized by all the countries that call themselves quote-unquote Christian. That's why they call them that. And now nobody wants to talk to me. Because everything I have to say goes against all the patriot nonsense and mythology. And I'm stuck in this limbo. And I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do now. I've got these books. I want to give them away free. And I can't. Because I can't get any airtime. I thank Sholly, by the way. And you see why. For allowing me to do this. Like I said, man, here I am. I finally, as I was saying in the beginning, we all get into this for a different reason. Me, I'm a perfectionist. I want to master whatever it is that I do. I want to feel like I've mastered something. And it took me this long to actually feel like I've been able to master it to the point where there's no stones unturned. I've at least lifted up every stone and connected the dot. I might not understand the fullness of it, but I get it. I get the concept. Where's the truth movement? Where is it? It turns out the real truth movement is being shunned. It's being persecuted. Because the truth doesn't sell. The truth doesn't jive with advertising. The truth doesn't jive with that American flag, which is a war flag. It just doesn't just doesn't work. What am I supposed to do now? I don't know what to do. I really don't. I can keep writing. Which is what I'm going to do. I'm going to persevere. I just don't know what the hell to do. I really don't. Because now I understand what true persecution is. What true persecution against Christianity is the true persecution against people who are living and telling the truth. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I need to bone up. Maybe I need to say I'm not living the truth. Maybe I'm not practicing what I'm preaching. I know that I'm not practicing what I'm being. Maybe I need to step out there. Maybe I need to just take a big leap of faith and see what happens. I don't know. I just don't know. But I'll tell you what. After being insulted and called a Bible thumper being told that I'm using a fallacy by invoking God, and I want to explain some things to you right now, okay? This is why I'm saying this. And if you can understand this, if you could just understand this, you'll see why everything is bullshit. Why it is that you've been kept from this knowledge, this law, so that you're induced into contracting with the state. Because, of course, the Bible will tell you never contract, never give an oath, never do anything. Everything we do as citizens is against the Bible law, the moral law, the scriptural law, the unenforceable voluntary law. Then you have everything that's opposed to it, which is what we constrict into. Contract, excuse me. I should say conscript. So here's the deal, folks. See, I'm not going to convince anyone out there that some God exists, okay? The very notion of that is, it's just not going to work. So what I need to do is instead, like everything else, I need to say, look, you see, the problem that you have as a U.S. citizen is that you are under the law. You are subject to a governmental agency that does believe in God. Well, wait, what do you mean? What? Government isn't even real. What are you talking about? Every single fucking law is based on the Bible. When you go into court, put your hand on the Bible, what the hell do you think you're doing? Why is that Bible there? See, these are the questions I started asking. So why does every road lead back to the Bible? Because the Bible is law. It's the foundation of law. Most of the maxims and principles that are good come from the Bible. What did it say in that previous thing we were reading? Government goes by the principles of law. What are the foundational principles of law? The Bible. It's law, not religion. You are to follow the law religiously. That's a big difference. Calling yourself a Christian, acting like one, are two completely different things. Again, I don't even like that word. Christian is not a word used in the Bible. It's just what we're all familiar with. But you see, I'm persecuted by Christians, those who call themselves Christians. Because they don't like what I have to say. They don't like the fact that I'm interpreting the Bible in the actual correct language, what its intent was by its authors, by its concordances, by its lexicons. See, people don't want it. Christians don't want to hear what I have to say. They are the persecutors because they're false. They're going with a title. They're not acting the part. They're not following the law in any way. It's a title. It's a worthless, pointless, useless title. I'm a Jew, I'm a Muslim, I'm this, I'm that. No, you're not. I'm anarchist. No, you're not. You're following the law, you can't be an anarchist. Well, I'm a millionaire, I'm a billionaire, I'm a millionaire with companies and that, but I'm going to put on a show called the Anarchcast. Well, you can't be an anarchist because you own freaking corporations. You have to follow the law. You're not a Christian. You're not following the law. You don't even know it. You've never read the Bible because you've only read it in English. You've never done due diligence. So what did I say? Government believes in God. Well, it doesn't matter what you believe. If you're under the system, the law of government, then you're under its belief system. How do I prove that government believes in God? Now, this is one of the most important things you're ever going to hear. Are you ready? In common law, an heir, as in one who can inherit lands, is he to whom lands, tenements, or hereditaments by the act of God and right of blood to descend of some estate in of inheritance. Wait a minute. What is that? An act of God? In common law? In common law, not any other kind of law, but in common law, we have an heir defined, you know, this is old Roman, of course, Roman law, basically. Well, wait a minute. Why does it say an act of God? Why would the notion of an act of God be something government talks about in its legal dictionary? Wait a minute. That's from Black's Fourth. Excuse me. What the heck does this mean? Damnum fatale, another Latin word. Fatal damage, damage from fate. Loss happening from a cause beyond human control or an act of God. What? An act of God? Well, Black's Four again, what are you talking about, an act of God, government? Well, are you admitting that there's a higher power, a higher law? Wait, what's going on here? That means that necessarily, as a citizen, a subject of your sovereignty, I have to believe it too. If I don't, I'm an absolute frickin' fool to be under your system when you're a believer in God. Well, wait a minute. What does this mean? An act of God or public enemies? How interesting. Let's see some other examples. Or what else can we find here? An act of God. Oh, hey, look! Black's First Law Dictionary actually defines act of God. Huh, what can that mean? An inevitable accident. Vice major. Any misadventure or causality is said to be caused by the act of God, when it happens by the direct, immediate, and exclusive operation of the forces of nature, uncontrolled or uninfluenced by the power of man and without human intervention. What is government saying God is? What I've been telling you the definition of God is, all that is self-existent and self-evident. What is that? That's nature. That is you and me without a name. That is anything that is part of nature, part of the universe, as the wholeness of what we call God. Everything living and everything that is part of existence that you don't need legal proof to prove exists, because that's a creation of man. Everything not a creation of man is God. That's the definition of God. It's not some man sitting on the clouds. It's not a man at all. That's you and me. We are parts of this inevitable accident. We are part of this thing that government believes in as a higher power. Why do I say it's a higher power? Because it's uncontrollable. Human intervention cannot prevent it. So you can sit there all day long like the biggest fool in America and say you don't believe in God. Meanwhile, you're following an entire structure of law that says the only way that you can avoid this legal system of law is through God, through Christ. What is Christ? The personification of the law. Follow the personification. Follow the law. Follow the Son. Become the Son. Allow the Christ to rise within you. Christ isn't returning, folks. Christ, there's no figure coming back. There's no man coming back. Christ has to be manifested through your actions, through you becoming Christ-like. Okay, this is all metaphor. Because that's the best way to tell the story of the law. An act of God. Hey, government believes in God. So honestly, it doesn't matter what you believe. You're under government. You're screwed. You're automatically a Christian. Or I should say an anti-Christian, an antichrist. That's what you really are, because you're under the legal system. What does legal define to Hume defines legal as anti-God, anti-nature. What else do you need to know? Now, folks, I want you to think about this. Where do you see this term, an act of God? Oh, how about on insurance claims, insurance policies? Well, surely, if we see the words act of God in insurance policies, well, then that must actually have a well, here it is. Here's the definition. Here's the definition. Anything that is caused by nature, anything that is not caused by man, anything that is caused by a higher authority, a higher power, something that we cannot prevent, something that is bigger than us. They also call it perils of the sea, because, of course, we're on the sea of commerce. An inevitable accident. Perils of the sea are defined in maritime and insurance law as natural accidents peculiar to the sea, which do not happen by the intervention of man. Well, how are they happening then? There's got to be something causing it. Let's call it God. Do you understand? Do you understand how idiotic it is to actually say that there is no God when the very government you're under and subjected to bases its entire structure of law on this word God? It defines it thusly as nature, what is not man-made, what is out of the control or ability to stop by man, natural causes, i.e. God is nature. And that's exactly what the concordances of the Bible tell you that God, or i.e. Jehovah, which is a word that was created, consonants or vowels put in just to be able to say the word that was unspeakable, which was whatever it was, those four letters, Yahweh, some people say it, doesn't matter. The word is not what's important. The meaning of the word, the intent of the word is what matters. And the question then that you have to ask yourself, after what we've discussed today, is are you and is your child an act of God or an act of the state? And the answer, my friends, my citizenships, my subjects, is that you're an act of the state. And that all the natural rights, all the God-given rights, as they call them, well, wait a minute, government calls them, refers to them as God-given rights. Well, gosh, that means government must respect the fact that there's God. All that is stripped away from you. It's called alienation. When you become a denizen, a citizen of the United States, you don't get natural rights when you accept political ones, artificial ones. As soon as you step into the realm of the matrix, the artificial legal matrix, you lose your connection to quote unquote God, nature. You get it? An act of God. Holy shit. What is an act of God? It is an act, event, happening, or occurrence, a disaster or effect due to natural causes, and an inevitable accident or disaster, a natural or inevitable necessity, which implies entire exclusion of all human agency, which operates without interference or aid from man, and results from natural causes, and is in no sense attributable to human agency. It is an accident which could not have been occasioned by human agency, but proceeded from physical causes alone. What is causing physical causes? What is it that causes this stuff? Remember, Jehovah is defined not as a noun, not as a name, but as a verb. Okay? That means all that was, all that is, and all that shall be. That is God. All of existence. Right? Now, every once in a while, for reasons truly unknown to us, which we should learn to respect, the fact that a lot of shit's going to be unknown to us. That's one of the higher parts of knowledge, in fact, is to admit to the unknown and actually to worship it. To not put all your eggs in one basket, especially on a fault line like a bunch of idiots. Right? What happens when we have an earthquake? That's an act of God. All right? It doesn't mean some man in the sky or some burning bush just flipped the frickin' switch and said, oh, you're bad people. I'm going to cause you an earthquake. Don't be stupid. I mean, that's religion. That's not what the Bible tells you. The Bible doesn't. That's natural causes. You're starting to get it. See, you're attributing, because the Bible story was told in allegory, in parables, in different types of stories, just like every other freaking fairy tale out there. You're attributing some, kind of like the gods of old, the gods of Greece and Roman gods and all that, you're attributing a personality to nature. And you do that so you can tell the story, right? The God communicates to man, tells him all this wisdom. Right? Well, you know, I guess the legal system could also do that. A big frickin' AI comes to life and tells man the legal system. The devil, you know, grows an apple tree and says, here, bite from this fig apple and learn all this useless knowledge, all this legal crap that we're so accustomed to. I mean, you could tell the story that way, right? It's no more ridiculous than the notion that God coming down and saying, here's the Ten Commandments, or here's my son, follow him, my son being the personification of my law. Please become, as the Bible says, a son of God, just like my one and only begotten son, right? It's a story, man. It's a way of explaining the law to you in a way that makes sense. It's how the Indians, Native American Indians, has so many tribal peoples out there have been telling and passing on the law for centuries and centuries and centuries. Even this law, even the Bible, even these religions were passed on by word, by story. That's how you remember things. The more ridiculous something is, the more you remember it. So you tell a story. Yep, sure thing. Jonah got swallowed by a sea monster. No, not a whale, a sea monster. That's how it's translated. It's when they used to have sea monsters on maps. Okay, it's a story. It's a warning. Hey, ships go here and don't return. It's a sea monster. Oh, well, here's Jonah. He goes, gets swallowed by the sea monster and, you know, meditates a while with the sea monster, smokes out a little bit, you know, eats some blubber and then gets spit out. Right. Yeah, that's not a real story, folks. First of all, there's no sea monsters. Second of all, the king translated as whale. And you have all this nonsense about Jonah and the whale. Meanwhile, you're missing the entire point of the entire story, which is told to you to express a moral story, a moral compass. Right? I mean, my God. And this is where I sit. Having this knowledge, having this understanding, having gone through the damn book, I'm sorry, I don't want to blasphemy the Bible, having gone through the concordances and all the language, all the different words, understanding the metaphor, and now I'm being persecuted because I finally have the truth and nobody wants to hear it because it goes against everything. And here's what I figured out most of all. This is what's so damn disappointing about the truth movement, the patriot movement, the freedom movement, the sovereignty movement. First of all, it's all a lie. It's all based on false, felonious foundations. It's none of it's true. You never become a sovereign. To be a sovereign, you have to rule over other people. Yet how many people do you see out there saying, I want to be sovereign? Okay, well, who are you going to rule over? Because that's a requirement to be sovereign. That's why they say God is the only sovereign. It should be, because it's the maker of the natural law. You get it? It's a story. It's a parable. It's a metaphor. Okay, you're never going to be sovereign. First of all, the state can't give you it's not going to make you equal to it. It certainly can't give you a status higher than itself. So you're never going to be sovereign in this so-called United States or any other nation. And unless you plan on defeating God, you're never going to be sovereign over nature. Unless you can somehow prevent an act of God, which is something uncontrollable by man, well, you know, maybe that's what they're shooting for with all this geoengineering and shit. I don't know. Genetics, which is just another word for eugenics. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're trying to do, is defeat God somehow, which is, of course, impossible. Building their Tower of Babel, just like in the old days. But see, that's what sucks, is that now that I have this understanding, now that I reached my goal, now that I got to the point where most of these people in these movements want to get, now I'm a Bible thumper. Now I'm always talking about God again. Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, yeah, look in your legal, look, figure it out. Look, think about it. My God. Because again, if you're under the law of another and that sovereign believes in God, well, then you do too. It's not a choice. See, you don't choose your God. This is one of the things I learned that is so important. You don't choose your God, you choose your law. And the choice of your law chooses your God. You follow one law or the other. You cannot have two masters. You cannot be in money and without it. You can't do it. This is where we're at. This is the spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening is not a religious one. The spiritual awakening is to suddenly go back to everything that is truth. Not the truth about money. Not the truth about fictional things. Not the truth about how the Federal Reserve was formed on some frickin' island. Who the hell cares? That has nothing to do with reality, with truth, with nature, with God. Has nothing to do with it. The spiritual awakening is going back to the truth, no matter how hard it is, no matter how much it hurts, to go back to the truth. And that means admitting to yourself that you're living in an utter lie, that you are part of this legal matrix, that everything you do is against nature and then therefore against God. Which means, of course, that everything you do is under human agency. It is preventable. It is not your destiny. It is not your course. It is, of course, the very purpose of creating this whole structure is to get you off course, to get you out of nature, away from God and God's law of nature. Again, why do you think they call it the law of nature? Why do they call it the laws of nature? Because nature is God. God is nature. The oneness of all being. That's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful knowledge. The ultimate knowledge. And yet it's still an unknown. I'm not saying that I freaking met God or had a personal, there's no personal relationship. But this is where love comes back into play. You see, what the Bible teaches as law is that which is opposed and will defeat in every case the legal law. What are those things? Love, true love, charity. Charity, gift giving, unconditional gift giving. What else? How about forgiveness? Why does the Bible say forgive? Terry, all that stuff. Well, think about it, man. If you lived in an age, in a place where everything was forgiven, the attorney class the court system would be out of business, and they are corporations, a lot of them owned by judges, the courthouses. They'd be out of business tomorrow, man. Think about it. Think about forgiveness. Think about the beautiful, wonderful power of forgiveness that can only come from true love for your fellow man and for what we call God, Jehovah, everything that is nature. Forgiveness. Forgiveness is the ultimate, ultimate cure for the legal cancer that's all around us. And if you don't get that, if you don't believe that that is the law, because it's obviously, it's self-evidently, it is the law, what case can possibly go forward unless there's a controversy? A case requires a controversy. You, I have to invoke a person and my own person to get you into court. I've therefore just disrespected the law because I'm respecting persons, fictions, artifice. I have to forgive. We all have to forgive. And guess what? That means forgiving all these a-holes in government. Just stop. Just let it go. They were fulfilling exactly what they were supposed to be. They're corrupt exactly as you expect them to be. Government works perfectly. All right? The only way that good men are ever going to be in power again is if it's voluntarily done and unforgiveness happens. I'm sorry. That's the law. I know you all want revenge. You want to see heads hung from trees. But forgiveness is the only way. Take away the power. Take away the money power. Take away forgive all debts. For God's sake, what would these people do without debt? Do you know that that's the way people are wealthy? Is they don't invest in real things. They invest in debt. Debt is the number one cause of wealth for people who invest in it. And that's something, I mean, if you don't know that, you don't know anything about the financial system. That's why government has so much investments in debt. Right? So everything's backwards. Everything's wrong because it's legal, which means opposed to or opposite of nature of God. This is why I'm giving my book away for free. This is why I'm giving it everything I do away for free. God, what does that mean? It means nothing legal. There's no barcodes. There's nothing on it that can be taxed or registered. It doesn't legally exist. This thing is not approved by church and state. And yet nobody wants it. Nobody wants it. Nobody. No, not me. I'm a Bible thumper. Oh, he's turned to God. Get away from him. well, that brings us to the end of our show. It's been a little different today, but hey, Shelly should be back next week. Shame on Shelly for being absent so much. You're listening to UCY TV. And by the way, I expect to be starting up a show of my own again today. Soon. I don't know where exactly yet. I've been talking to Jules, but I don't know. We'll see. I certainly don't want any censorship, and this UCY seems to be the only place left that isn't censored for telling the truth. I don't know. It's a strange place now to be in this movement. If a movement that doesn't move, a movement that hasn't moved in decades, it needs an enema. It really does. I don't know what to say, man. I hope that what we've talked about today has been enlightening. I hope that it puts away that instinctual feeling to always walk away from anybody who talks about the Bible and all of that stuff. I hope that it allows you to get past these trigger words that turn you off so that you never get to the Bible. See you later, folks. System of systems. I will MK Ultra, ya. Put the MK scope on ya. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open ya. 57 millimeter Mark 110.
20 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary for the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them.